You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show, brought to you by The Athletic UK. And Happy New Year, the first Fulhamish podcast of 2022. As Christmas was cancelled once again for Fulham, three postponements in a row, Birmingham, Reading and Swansea, mean that Fulham won't play a league game for nearly 3 weeks. The situation is unprecedented and none of it Fulham's doing for once this year. Makes a change from earlier in 2021 when it very much was Fulham's doing. So in today's podcast, what do we talk about? Well, there's lots of Fulham stuff to get our teeth into. The leftovers are gone, but there's plenty of Fulham nibbles to chew on as we head into the new year. And I'm joined today by Jack Kelly.
Good morning.
Lydia Campbell.
Hi, guys.
And Ben Jarman.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year to you all. Okay, well, let's just have a bit of a discussion, I think, first over what on earth happened to Fulham this Christmas. Jack, I imagine you'd have had all three fixtures ready, Birmingham at home, Reading away, and then your big trip to Swansea. And one by one, they just got crossed off the calendar, really, didn't they? It was, at first I felt like Birmingham was like, okay, bit annoying. And then by Reading and definitely Swansea, I was just starting to get a bit annoyed.
Mm. Yeah, especially Boxing Day being a big tradition for English football. We've had plenty of fixtures down the years like you do every year. But Birmingham was annoying. And actually, I didn't even book my train to Swansea because I kind of just knew it was going to get called off the way things were going, and kept my powder dry. I was quite happy about that because it's an expensive train to get. It's quite a long way. But the Reading one was frustrating because just wanted to go to a game, basically. And it was getting to that point where I was like, oh, it's been ages now. Come on, we lost to Sheffield United. We haven't won since like 20th of November. So, yeah, it was going to be good to get back, especially to, well, not even, because Madstad is not a good place to go. So slightly relieved that we didn't have to go to the Madstad, but also slightly annoyed that we didn't get to play any football over the festive period. A really weird era and like period for Fulham over the last few weeks where you've sort of got FOMO because everyone else is playing around you, picking up points, and we're now down to third in the table and we can't really do anything about it. We're just sitting here waiting for the next game. And yeah, just annoying that we can't play. Even Sky last night on the darts said that Fulham were playing Swansea tomorrow. Well, that's definitely not happening.
Did they actually?
Yeah,
someone didn't update it. So it was amazing.
Yeah, unbelievable, really. But very frustrating, and we're just sort of sitting here waiting and hopefully a trip to Ashton Gate on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Lydia, it's been an unprecedented time for football generally. I think there was over 100 postponements in the EFL alone. That's excluding the Premier League. At the moment, it looks like the FA Cup game against Bristol City is happening. And I think the FA Cup has a much higher threshold for what you need for a postponement because there's such little flexibility in the FA Cup. You've got to get the games played in order. And I think last year they said to Derby and Villa in particular cases, well, if you haven't got any players, then literally play the kids, unlike the EFL, who seem to not fully buy the play the kids rule. Did you feel like a couple of the teams we were facing? It's hard to know and it's hard to accuse because none of us know the facts and never will because it's basically medical confidentiality. But from a distance, it felt like Reading in particular were bending the rules to suit their own advantage.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels that way with a number of clubs across the footballing pyramid, doesn't it? you know, whenever you have an announcement that says injuries and COVID recovery, you're thinking, alarm bells are ringing. And yeah, as you say, we will probably never know who had COVID and who didn't. But, you know, I don't know if the football authorities have handled it all that well. And, you know, because there seems to be so many really late call-offs as well across the pyramid, I do think there's probably teams have milked it a little bit when it's came to player injuries as well. And one thing that is interesting is the EFL obviously cancelling their match day COVID tests to try and stop these cancellations happening so late. Because obviously with Omicron, you're getting new cases every day. So they're trying to prevent a load of new cases happening on match day, saying that it's sufficient for the test to happen the day before. Bit of a risk maybe, but also it does at least allow football to actually happen. But yeah, you know, I think we're all just going to have to ride the storm a little bit on this one in society and football.
Yeah, I mean, Ben, it will be pretty much 3 weeks without a match for Fulham. It'll be 3 weeks and 1 day without a league game before we face Reading on the 11th of January. Birmingham's been moved to the 18th of January. There's a lot of games coming up in a pretty short window. What do you feel about the kind of the league advantage now? We are down to third. Bournemouth have won the games that they needed to win whilst we've been off. I like to stay positive, but I'd much rather be in Bournemouth's camp right now, even though if we did win all our matches, we'd go above them. It does feel like they have the advantage now just because they've got those points on the board and we've got a lot of work to do in order to even just get our heads just above them again.
I think the championship is all about rhythm, isn't it? And Fulham are definitely out of rhythm at the moment in comparison to all of our immediate promotion rivals. Obviously, as you said, we've had just over 3 weeks off. And to be fair, we were struggling beforehand. So I think that the break that we've had can either go one of two ways. In that, firstly, it enables us to get players back fit, get them sort of like all the little niggling injuries they may have been playing through out of their system. And then it enables us to try and have a look at that at a little bit of a deeper level on the training pitch as well, and making sure that we are having a plan B available for our games. Also making sure that the players know what their roles are, because I feel like we came into Christmas as a massive steaming pile of mediocrity for the most part. And this break gives us a chance to really rest and reset. I think that that's the positive for Fulham. But as I say, one of the negatives is that you're coming into a big run of games where you're massively out of rhythm in comparison to the rest of the league. And I think that this is going to be a massive test of Marco Silva's mettle, because he's not one for rotating the squad that much. And I think that's probably one of the only drawbacks that I have from him and his opening sort of 6 to 9 months' tenure as Fulham boss, is that he hasn't rotated the squad, I think, as much as some of the fan base would have liked him to. I think there's a certain element that you could probably argue is down to injury and sometimes down to COVID, of course, but he doesn't tend to shy to move too much away from the 15 or 16 players that have got his confidence. And when he does, it seems to be in very extreme circumstances. So it'd be nice to see how he deals with having all these 7 or 8 games in the space of a month. And I do agree with you. It's sort of like Bournemouth have got a bit of an advantage here, but you know, it's 3 games that we're very capable of winning to get back level with them. And then obviously there are many opportunities to go above them.
Yeah. Jack, what do you feel about the time that Fulham will have had to, I guess, re-prepare for the second half of the season? I mean, we've basically got 3.5 months to play half a season of football now. If the league ends when it's supposed to in early May, it's not like other clubs where they'll have been completely disrupted, training will have been cancelled for weeks. For the most part, we think Fulham avoided any cases of COVID, or definitely we've avoided a significant amount. So this would have been proper training time, a real mid-season break. But we have seen cases in like the Premier League where actually the teams that have had games every 2 days have done better than teams that had a 2 week break. So it's not a given that Fulham are going to come out of this all guns blazing. In a weird way, maybe good that we have this FA Cup game as a kind of almost like it's going to be like a pre-season friendly as far as the club treat it, surely.
Yeah, it's just going to be getting back into that sort of routine of playing an actual football match. I think training every day is actually an advantage because we can work on things, we can get patterns of play back into training. And I think that there's a chance that, yes, the fixtures are extremely congested and it could be problematic, but it's not too bad. I mean, you've got Saturday midweek, which isn't unheard of in the Championship. It's just the fact that in this month of January, there wasn't actually scheduled to be any midweek fixtures. And it just so happens we've got two. It's not a schedule that's unheard of. So I think it's manageable. And it's just about now going into that Bristol City game, getting back into, like Ben says, the rhythm of things and just trying to at least gather some sort of momentum because... Yeah, Bournemouth were meant to play today and their game against Peterborough is off. West Brom in this period have been pretty below par. Lost to a Derby team who are fighting for their lives and are basically already relegated and could pull off a great escape. And West Brom getting two red cards yesterday. That's Alex Moa out for 3 games, Sam Johnson out for 3 games. And if we can just get into, like Ben said again, the rhythm and get those 3 points here and there and start moving up towards the top two again or getting into the top two again and picking off these teams. These are winnable games of football. Very, very winnable. And I know it's frustrating because we haven't won since, you know, late November and we've really been on a bad run of form in the Championship. But the players are good enough. We're really good. And Seri is the only player that's obviously not going to be involved due to AFCON. And we'll see, maybe even the January transfer window, we can pick up a player or two as well.
I mean, Lydia, how Marco, I think, deals with this Bristol City game is really interesting. Because on one hand, we don't need a cup run. We don't need more games. But then also, given the fact that Fulham haven't won since late November, as Jack pointed out, players need confidence. I feel like Mitro needs a goal just to... Mitro's always been a streaky player. Fulham are a streaky team. Nearly every game we've won this season has been on a streak of runs. And you want players to get fitness, but if you also then got a game on the Tuesday against Reading, that's a really tough one to call. It's not quite play the kids because you do need some match sharpness, but it's also you want to give people a rest. So, and do you want to win it? Yes, because we want to win every game and also we need confidence, but also we don't need another match. So I genuinely don't know. I'm quite glad I'm not Marco Silva on this one, put it that way.
Well, look, do you know what? You have to look at it from a player's perspective, I think. And I reckon players will, having to sit out the festive season, yeah, don't get me wrong, they maybe need a little bit of a break. But having 3 games called off, I mean, those players having to go to training every day, knowing your next league game isn't until, what, the 11th of January? I mean, that is so dull for players. They don't want that. Players don't want that. Yes, they might need a little bit of a break, but they don't want to be training endlessly without playing matches. That's the nature of a sportsman. A sportsman or woman, you don't want to be training endlessly. So I would say a lot of these players will be thinking, actually, I'd quite like a run out on Saturday in the FA Cup. Yeah, you can treat it sort of like a pre-season game in the sense you can rotate quite a bit throughout the match. But to be honest, I would say that at least half of our starting 11 planned for Tuesday night against Reading should be playing on Saturday. Give some of the kids a go as well. But to be honest, I would say a lot of these players will be absolutely gunning for a run out. I don't think they need to be rested ahead of Tuesday night. In the sense we've just had a big rest. But I think you manage it in the way you would any other time. It's the FA Cup, you go for a mixture. I think that's the early FA Cup. You go for a mixture of players and you're happy. You don't wait until the 70th minute to rotate in the match as well. Maybe make changes at half time, that kind of thing. Give players half a game where they need. But I would say these players will all want to play because they've been starved of competitive action for, you know, nearly a month. And they will hate that. Absolutely hate that.
I mean, Ben, the worst result here could be extra time. There's no replays in the third and fourth round this year because they wanted to alleviate some of the pressure on the league so that we could have rescheduled games. And you've seen that the Birmingham game has gone in where an FA Cup third round replay could have happened. Thank the Lord there are no replays, because genuinely there was a prospect of playing Bristol City three times in a row. And look, I've got nothing against Bristol City, but that would have been the most boring after the 3 weeks you'd have had. And then we just play Bristol City over and over again. It's like, please give me something different. We'll be able to make five subs, but I guess with Reading looming on the Tuesday, maybe extra time isn't quite what we want. But then again, five subs is a lot of subs to be able to make.
Five subs is a lot of subs to make, you're right, Sammy. And I think extra time is probably something we definitely don't want. I mean, when you have players that have been off for that long, and as Lid said, they've been training for non-stop for the best part of 3.5-4 weeks, to then get them back into extra time at game level could actually be quite dangerous in terms of picking up injuries that a lot of players just simply don't want. I'd also be really surprised if there's an appetite for Fulham to want to go through in this game. I mean, I think Jack said it, you kind of want to treat it almost as a pre-season friendly and just get players back up to speed and back in to those game time scenarios where they're understanding what you should do in certain situations and getting back up to speed and almost just shaking that rust off. To be fair, this game, even before the cancellations, in my mind, kind of felt like a throwaway because the focus wholly this year should be on the league. We shouldn't be trying to go on big cup runs or, you know, trying to upset favourites. I think the thing for Fulham is this year should be focus wholly on the league, try and get promotion done as quickly as possible to set ourselves up for hopefully a good strategy going into the third Premier League season in six and hopefully avoiding a third relegation in six. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like this game has so many positives in that we can get players back fit, we can rotate as much as we can, obviously with the five subs. But it's kind of one that if we lose, myself personally, I'm not too bothered. I couldn't really care less.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to just get your thoughts on, Ben, was John McElseri will now be at AFCON. He won't be available for the cup game, which means that it's a chance for maybe us to get a first glance of what we're going to see in the middle. Do you think it's a simple case of Kearney coming in and replacing Seri? Do you think we could see some Nathaniel Chalabar? Do you think we could see anything else slightly more revolutionary than that from Marco Silva? It'd be very interesting to see how we adapt without Seri for this month. But then again, the transition had already kind of started because Kearney had been working his way back into the team.
Yeah, completely. I had a really good listen to yourself and Jack on the Thursday Club podcast a couple of weeks ago whilst I was doing a very long drive up to Wolverhampton for Christmas. And I really enjoyed the discussion between you three, where Jack was sort of saying that losing Seri and swapping Seri and Harrison Reed isn't just as simple as that. It's not just a quick switch and you expect the whole balance of the team to go back to normal. I kind of do agree with Jack in that Seri is going to be a huge miss for us when AFCON happens because he is that metronome at the bottom of the midfield. My problem with Seri over the past 6 weeks is that he's lacked any sort of intensity to drive the play forward at times, and he's really lacked any sort of incisiveness and then again decisiveness in his decision making. And I think too often that with Seri, whether this is because of the influence of Marco Silva or simply himself, is that at times he really lacks that intensity to drive us forward when he should be the real main creative hub from deep lying positions. I think that when he goes, we'll see a different Fulham because you'll get Tom Kearney in there. And one thing that Kearney's great at doing is receiving the ball on a half turn and then driving us forward. And we've seen that at Peterborough countless times. And every time we've seen him come on the pitch, he gives us really good impetus to get the ball forward and sort of drive into spaces that you don't get with Seri. It would be nice to see a sort of switch between him and Reed, where you have Reed sort of sitting at the bottom of the metronome, as it was, in that sixth position. And then you have Tom Kenny a little bit further forward with a bit of freedom of expression to go and just sort of make things happen. One thing you'd quickly touched on, Chalobah, it'd be nice to see him back, but I haven't been overly impressed with him throughout his tenure as a Fulham player. I think he's been a bit give and take at times. When he started at Bristol City, I thought he didn't offer it anywhere near enough. And I think since then, we've only seen him a handful of times, obviously due to injury. But when he has been on the pitch, he almost looks like a player that's been playing within himself. And that's some of the reviews that had come from the Watford fans when we signed him, that he's a great player. He has all the potential to go far. But ultimately, because he's had so many injuries over the past few years, there's almost this Michael Owen-esque management of oneself where he's trying not to get injured again. So he almost is playing with sort of the handbrake on. And I also feel that's similar for Josh Onuma, who had a lot of injuries at quite a young age and now looks like he's trying not to get injured again. I don't know if any of the other guys agree with this.
I feel like Josh Onuma plays, he only ever really plays to maybe 90%. So maybe that is because he's trying to, he's been so injury plagued in the past that maybe it is a bit, he's maybe a little bit cautious. There's been some games where he's been brilliant and there's been other games where you just look like he's nearly stepping out of a tackle, or he's not really wanting to go into a 50-50, or when he's been driving forward, he sort of had the chance to really, really go for it, but he slowed the game down. I'm a little bit worried about the mixture of outside Tom Kearney, what we have in to replace Siri. That's kind of my approach on it. Like, some of those players are fine coming in maybe for the last 20 minutes of a match, but can we start with any of them? And the worry is with Tom is that we have to wrap him up in cotton wool in case he gets injured again. And it's been fine when there's been both Siri and Kearney available, but there isn't for, you know, depends how far Siri goes in that in AFCON. But I'm a little bit worried about the dynamic there, about our depth in those positions.
Yeah, 5 games in 2 weeks for Tom Kearney's knee must be sending his doctor into some kind of tailspin of like, no, don't do it, Tom. Save yourself. Into some kind of tailspin of like, no, don't do it, Tom. Save yourself. I mean, the postponements potentially can keep on coming for Fulham. The kind of fixture permutations and combinations are pretty nuts. So first of all, there's any progression to the fourth round of the FA Cup by either ourselves or Middlesbrough. I think Middlesbrough have Mansfield in the third round. So, I mean, screams banana skin, but also you'd imagine one of us will get through to the fourth round with those fixtures. Means that Middlesbrough game will probably be moved to a midweek, which I mean, that's an arduous enough journey on a Saturday, but Middlesbrough midweek would definitely be a tough trip. And then this Blackpool game on the 29th also potentially could be postponed as well, because I did some digging into this. Peter Rutzler gave me the answer. If teams have 3 or more players on international duty, we can request a postponement, apparently. We'll have 3 in Anthony Robinson, Michael Hector and Bobby Decker Dover-Reed, because they'll be playing for either USA or Jamaica. And we might have Seri. So more games round the corner. The Swansea game needs to be rescheduled somewhere. Maybe it'll be moved to that FA Cup weekend if both ourselves and Swansea manage to get knocked out. But yeah, there's definitely still some fixtures to be decided for Fulham. It's the deck of cards is not fully landed yet from being tossed up in the air. All right, we're going to take a break there, and afterwards we're going to get into some of your questions.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here. I'm joined by Jack Kelly.
Hello.
Lilia Campbell.
Hi, guys.
And Ben Jarman.
Hello, Samuel.
All right. We've got lots of questions for the rest of today's podcast. The email account is honestly overflowing. I'm going to have to split them over two different podcasts in order to get to as many of the emails as I can that have been filling up over Christmas while we've not been doing podcasts. We've also got some Twitter questions, which is where we're going to start. And the first one from Elizabeth, who says, how would you rate Silva's tenure so far? She says, I'm generally very positive, but I feel like with this squad, we should have been further ahead at the top. Jack, I'll start with you. Do you want to give it a school grade rating, A to U? Or you could give it like GCSEs now, where they do it 0 to 9, which I still haven't managed to get my head around.
Not
9 is good.
No.
9 is good, apparently.
Yeah, my brothers were in that sort of... yeah, numbers sort of thing. But I'll give it an A minus because
positive.
We've had a very good season. We've scored 51 goals, conceded 19 in 23 games. And we've had one blip this season. And that's or a run of fixtures where it hasn't quite gone our way, which has basically been right now or in the last few weeks. And I think there's scope to pick it up and basically get back to winning ways and get back to being one of the most dominant teams in the league. We have the players, we have the manager. And in terms of Marco Silva himself, this is a guy who came in knowing he'd failed at Premier League level with Watford, Hull, albeit they almost stayed up, and Everton, of course, who, well, I mean, Everton right now, but we won't get into it. But so I think this is his chance to prove himself that he can manage at a top level. And it's just whether we can get ourselves over the line. And what's really been puzzling me is that the fact that we haven't been playing for the last few weeks has really put some doubts into, I'm sure not only just my mind, but a lot of people's minds about, can we actually go up this year? And I think it's just down to the fact that we haven't won in a while and people have missed that winning feeling and missed us playing that really good attacking style of football. And that really is. I mean, this sounds naive as hell, but when we went up under Parker, I was like, I genuinely feel like Parker could keep us up. Yeah, I think. And then we sort of, you know, and obviously we didn't. But under Silva, with these players, and I think with the squad that we've got, if we go up and we add two or three, and I'm not talking spending millions, I'm talking two or three or four max. I genuinely think with the attacking intent that we have when we attack, we can score goals and we can stay up. And that's just down to the fact that whoever goes up with us, I think will be extremely, you know, up against it. You know, the Premier League level is going to be extremely high again next year. And I just think some of the teams who are going to stay up this season in the Premier League just aren't that good. I think Leeds, I think if Burnley get out of it, they're not good. Watford, they're not that great. I think Norwich and Newcastle are gone. And I know I've sort of gone off on a bit of a tangent here about Marco Silva. So I think Marco Silva has the potential, and if he keeps us up, then he's got that sort of pedigree back of what his potential a few years ago. And if he keeps this Fulham team up, and obviously he has to get us up in the first place, I think that will bode very well for him.
Miss Campbell, what's your grade?
I'm going to be slightly less positive and go for a B+.
I'm going to go for a B+ as well, which I think is slightly below where the BBC put him in one of their articles. And their summarisation was, Fulham haven't had good results recently, but they'll be okay in the other side of Christmas and they'll beat loads of teams. That's literally like their one paragraph.
I know, I saw this.
That was you, wasn't it, Sammy?
No, I saw this bloody article.
The analysis is crap. I know two of you out here work for the BBC, but that is terrible.
No. Every report by every club had someone who I know is like lead commentator for that club. And nothing against the guy that wrote the Fulham one, but it was just, you literally just had to find him. He's a Spurs fan.
It's rubbish.
I didn't really understand it. It was like, well, what? Surely there's someone that you could have found that knew something about Fulham's season that could have given a slightly better report. Anyway, let's come on to next question from PK, who says, with West Brom slipping up, Blackburn slash QPR creeping up, who do you think is our biggest threat to automatic promotion? Obviously, Lydia, Blackburn have been absolutely flying. Brereton Diaz, I think, is only a goal behind Mitrovic now. If it's not a goal, it's two. And they finally had their winning run curtailed yesterday after they drew 0-0 with Huddersfield, which was a bit of a relief. I think if they won yesterday, I was starting to get seriously worried about Blackburn. As the question alluded to, QPR have been on a decent run of form. West Brom have really just seemed dead set on not challenging for automatic promotion, the amount of chances they've missed. So, yeah, how do you see the overall picture? And, of course, Bournemouth are there and flying and now 4 points ahead of us, albeit two games more.
So I think Bournemouth are still going to be in that automatic promotion picture come the end of the season. I think I don't like to say it, but I think Parker is doing fine with them. Do you know what I mean? I think he has a decent squad to work with. Okay, he has a decent squad to work with. I think that's it. He does, you know, Parker Ball is well and truly there, which is pretty dull, but I think Blackburn are the team to watch in terms of possibly being in that picture as well. And I think, you know, the reason for that is because they have a goal scorer. Yes, QPR have guys who can stick the ball in the back of the net, but Diaz has been the standout performer outside of Solanke and Mitrovic. And I think that's what you need. I think you need a goal scorer. And I don't think the other teams in and around there have someone who is consistently going to put the ball away. It'll just depend on whether they can keep him in this window. I know there's been quite a bit of interest. I think there's been a bit from some Premier League sides as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And Tony Mowbray was very clear the other day. He was asked about it in an interview and he just said, look, I'm not going to stand in front of any player who receives a good offer. So that's interesting that he's already kind of saying that, rather than just being like, oh no, he's not for sale, no chance. He's very honest about it. He says, look, if there's a really good offer comes in and a player wants to go, who am I to stand in his way? So that'll be interesting. That will define their season if they can keep him. So I would be a little bit worried about Blackburn, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
I mean, on that subject, one bit of transfer tidbit that has been slowly bubbling around over Christmas has been our very own Alexander Mitrovic being linked to Juventus. I saw Graham Bailey tweeting it out. I'd also heard murmurings before that came out that was something that is on the cards. It looks like they've kind of inquired into Mitrovic. And the obvious replacement for Mitrovic, Ben, if he was to go, is Brereton Diaz. And if we got a load of money for Mitrovic, there's no doubt that we could afford whatever we needed to pay for Brereton Diaz. And you'd imagine we'd be of interest to him, really. I mean, we're much more likely to go to the Premier League than Blackburn, with all respect. And I could be made to look very silly in 6 months' time when they go up at our expense. But if you analyse it from a bit more of a kind of non-passionate point of view, certainly you would argue that's a pretty safe statement to make. What do you make of the rumours? Do you kind of think there's any credence in them? Can you really see Mitrovic leaving in January?
No, I can't. I think it's most likely just agent talk. And I can't see that the club would let him go in January. It would just be shooting yourself in the foot for no apparent reason. There's no guarantee that if you signed Brereton Diaz for a good chunk of whatever you sold Mitrovic for, he'd come in and score as many goals as he is in Blackburn anyway. So I think, I don't know why you would risk that, having giving away the best striker in a championship to sign someone who, you know, for quite a lot of money might not go the same way that he is now. I think we've seen this with clubs before, especially when they get to sort of Premier League level, that they sell one striker and they get another one in, and the other striker they sign for a lot of money doesn't really do too much. So if I were Fulham, I wouldn't sell Mitrovic. I think he's such a intrinsic part to what we're trying to do at this club. And Silva's come in and spoken about him almost in every single press conference about how he wants to use Mitrovic, how he's the focal point of his attack and how he can get the best out of him. And to be honest, I think other than... I think he's probably been the coach that's got the best out of Mitrovic so far, you know, judging by all of the managers that we've had over the past sort of 4 or 5 years. I think Silva's finally managed to get him working in a fluid formation that revolves around Mitrovic rather than him just being a part of another sort of tactical innovation. But yeah, I don't see why we'd sell him. As much as I'd love to see the face of Pepsi in South America at the cottage, just selling bucket loads of shirts and, you know, like all of our Instagram feed being full up with chili flags and random Spanish comments. Like, I'd love that. It'd be like when we signed Rafik Halish all over again, but instead of the comments being Algerian or whatever they are, they would be Spanish. So
you would be in your element if we signed, if Beres and Diaz banging goals for Fulham, Ben.
Diaz signed for us, I would get on fulhamfc.com/shop immediately and get a shirt.
It would be your ultimate wheelhouse if Ben Jarman got to watch Brereton Diaz banging in goals every week. But look, we still love Mitro. I mean, Jack, do you kind of see anything in it? As much as fits go, Mitrovic at Juventus does feel like...
It doesn't fit for me.
No?
No. It doesn't fit at all for me. It doesn't... Like,
I more mean maybe the stature of the... I more mean the stature of the club. No, a club that's maybe not at its... you know, has obviously struggled in recent years. Mitrovic could go in there and pretty much get guaranteed goals in Serie A. That would be... That's why I could see it working from that point of view. I don't know necessarily claims know enough about Juventus. But yeah, Jack, what did you think of the rumours? And can you see any truth in them?
No, absolutely not. I heard that Juventus are in some sort of financial problems / getting investigated into some stuff. So I don't think they're in a position where they can sign Alexander Mitrovic. And I don't think Mitrovic is going to... Yes, Juventus are a big club and whatever, in the Champions League, whatever. I think Mitrovic is on a right path here at Fulham. He's under a manager, and Marco Silva has put his arm around him and gone, look, you're my main man. You had a terrible season last season because someone decided to completely shaft him. Mitrovic is a way better striker than Dominic Solanke. I will literally say that until the cows come home. But
you're going to die on that hill.
Yes, I will. And I will pass away on that hill, definitely. I think that Mitrovic is going nowhere but perhaps the Premier League if Fulham were to get there come May. In terms of transfers as a whole, I'd be very surprised if we dipped into the market too heavily. I think there'll be a lot of perhaps outgoings as opposed to incomings. A lot of people are clamouring for a new left back. And the fact that Robinson's been of interest to West Ham, people are saying get back Ryan Fredericks or get in Arthur Masuaku. Interesting. Very interesting. I'm sure because we are Fulham, we'll be sat here on deadline day, very giddy at the chance of signing Perry and G from Cardiff.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to it. January 31st, it's my 30th birthday, and I'll be sat here refreshing the transfer deadline day as we sign some striker from a Norway on loan. Havard Norvite Mark II. Come on to another question. Actually, this was not so much a question, but just a nice bit of intel from Paul Cooper, friend of the pod, who just said, been talking to a striker from another championship club, and he said we would win it, which is just the kind of intel that I love to hear from Paul.
Who are we to argue with the king of comedy? Paul Cooper, you know.
Well, so. No, and his ITK source, another championship striker, who has said 100% we're winning it. So
that was definitely Dominic Solanke who definitely said that.
But do you think Paul Cooper's friends with Dominic Solanke?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I would love to know.
It's got to be someone. It's got to be someone in the West Country, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Is it? It must be like Bristol City or
Andy Vyman.
Surely.
He's been talking to Chris Martin.
Oh, it could be Chris Martin.
Can we get him on and ask him? I want to know.
Yeah, I want to know who that championship striker is. DM me. I want to find out. Final question in this section from Richard Bamber, who says, did you all have a good Christmas and did at Jack Kelly FFC have two dinners? So the first part of the question, Jack, did you have two dinners?
Sort of.
Brilliant.
Sorry.
How can you sort of have two dinners?
So basically what happened?
Because Jack Kelly has two meal deals. This is why he's asked this question.
I did have two meal deals yesterday. Very, very nice. Basically, my brother, my house was sort of riddled with COVID over Christmas. And my brother and his girlfriend went up to the north to spend actual Christmas Day with her family. So we basically sort of put on hold the turkey dinner till the 27th, just for the fact that hopefully my mum would have tested negative.
Said too much.
Too much turkey.
I'm always testing negative at Christmas.
Anyway, and then they came back on the 27th. So on the 25th, we had beef Wellington, and on the 27th, we had a turkey dinner. So like your classic, whatever, with trimmings. It was a lot of food, which was very fun. And now I'm just munching on some sweets at 11:20 in the morning.
But you didn't have two dinners on the same day, just to clarify.
No, but I usually do. So like I'll have the turkey and then a couple of hours later, I'll have like a turkey sandwich or like two turkey sandwiches.
That's not two dinners. That's having some turkey leftovers on the evening. That's not two dinners.
Yeah, that's two... just... meals.
No, everyone has that. That's nothing special.
You lose every
two
week.
Two meal deals is weird. Having some turkey leftovers after your turkey dinner is very much not.
Yeah.
And then the second part of the question, Lydia, did you have a good Christmas?
I had a lovely Christmas back in Belfast, which was great. We didn't have any COVID, which was lovely, but good. Nice. That's a miracle, I think, by today's standards, but. It was very nice. Nice to be home. Missed Fulham, but it was very nice to be home.
You didn't miss much.
Well, yes, I didn't miss much.
And Ben, did you have a nice Christmas?
Yes, I had a really nice Christmas, thank you. My lungs were riddled with COVID in the run-up to Christmas, and I got out on Christmas Eve. So, yeah, I was able to have one day of freedom before the Christmas festivities, and then... went up to Wolves with my girlfriend for a couple of days to see all her family and friends. Lovely place up there, lovely part of the world. Would go back, 10 out of 10.
Great. Okay, well, we'll take a break there. We've got a few emails before we finish the pod.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast is Sammy here with Jack, Lydia and Ben. As promised, some emails. As I mentioned earlier, we would be here until tomorrow if I read all the emails. So I'm going to spread them out over the next few podcasts. There's plenty of podding to get through and still not that many games for at least a week or so. So there's plenty of space to read some emails. This one from Steve Wells. I'm going to paraphrase some of this email because it's quite long. But he starts off by saying, I don't know how much of this news has made its way to England, but Shahid Khan has been all over the sporting news here in the States and it hasn't been good. The news doesn't involve Fulham. It's all about the ongoing dumpster fire that has been the Jacksonville Jaguars NFL season. For people that aren't familiar with the NFL, much of the debacle may seem confusing. I'll spare you the dry dissertation on the structure of American football coaching. The best way to explain this mess is that when Shahid Khan hired Urban Meyer to coach the Jags, he hired the NFL version of Felix McGath. Actually, Meyer was worse than McGath. He's kind of like Felix McGath cubed. It should be noted that this dumpster fire was burning brightly in October and Khan didn't swing the axe until December the 15th. He then goes on to say that it's been a public relations disaster. Only kind of outbreaks of COVID in the NFL has diminished the heat. And Khan has been pilloried for allowing this to go on as long as it has. There's been a lot of writing about how consistently bad the Jaguars are under Khan's ownership. So then he kind of tries to look at it, what it means from a Fulham perspective. And he has some thoughts about saying how Khan's horrific record of personal hires in both sports. And he says that the appointment of Marco Silva as our gaffer is a case of a blind squirrel finding an acorn rather than any acumen on Shahid Khan's part. He goes on to say, I'm not sure how much of Fulhamish's time you can spend dedicated to something on the NFL, but he would be interested in finding out how Shahid Khan has managed to find two Felix McGaths in two different sports on two different continents. It is an interesting one. I had noted that the Jaguars have looked terrible this season, and they have been terrible for a while, but I don't really understand NFL, and I just don't know, Ben and Lydia, and given that you two do understand your NFL, I thought you guys would be perfect to answer this question. It's been sitting in the inbox for a couple of weeks. Is there any kind of cause for concern from a Fulham perspective at how badly this situation seems to have been managed in America, or is it just a case of two different sports, you can't compare them, etc., etc.?
Okay, so I'll caveat this by saying I'm not a massive NFL expert. I do watch it fairly regularly.
You watch Red Zone every Sunday?
I watched Red Zone all of Sunday last night because I was in my fantasy Super Bowl game, which I've somehow managed to turn a dumpster fire of a season into a playoff run. So that's good. At least I'm better than the Jags. But what I do know is from this and the Around the NFL podcast is that basically, the Jags, ever since Shahid Khan took over, have been perennially on a losing run of seasons whereby they've lost more than 10 games in every single season aside from one where they were, if you're a Jacksonville fan, you're probably going to say a play away from going to the Super Bowl and you got Tom Brady'd big time. But I think the main thing that sticks out here is that Urban Meyer has a reputation in college football of being one of the best coaches there, but also on the flip side to that, also has a reputation of causing utter chaos. I think one of his Florida Gators teams from back in the early 2000s, I think I read somewhere that it was 53 men on the roster, and since then 48 or somewhere in the 40s have gone on to have a criminal conviction or some sort of run-in with the law since then. So you can kind of guess what kind of manager or coach, depending on what vernacular you want to use here, Urban Meyer is and what his teams are like. And I think that we saw this in Jacksonville where he was threatening to hire and fire coaches at the drop of a hat. The players weren't exactly on the same hymn sheet as Urban Meyer. And one thing that's came out recently is that the Jaguars have a GM in place, a guy called Trent Baalke, who... if I've pronounced that wrong, my apologies, who seems to have sort of sweet-talked his way into the ear of Shahid Khan and is now one of the most powerful men in the whole of organisations. But one thing about Trent Baalke is that no one in the NFL seems to respect him. And this is what is throwing Jacksonville off course at the moment because they are looking for a new head coach and no one wants to work for this GM. It sounds like he's the kind of guy that basically just loves himself. And is turning off a lot of experienced heads other than one guy called Bill O'Brien, who basically ran the Houston Texans into the ground in about 18 months at the end of his tenure there. So I feel like Jacksonville are one of these organizations where you have a super rich owner that is constantly being sweet-talked by people that basically sell snake oil every single year. And Liz, feel free to chime in here because I know you follow the Jags a lot closer than I do because I'm a Packers fan and I think you are an actual Jags fan yourself. But from an outsider looking in, it seems like on NFL at least that Shard gets sweet talked, as I said, by people that sell snake oil almost on a biannual basis. And that means that Jacksonville are in this constant cycle of failure because they just can't figure out the path they want to go on. They leap from one coach to the next, one GM to the next, one style of play to the next. Whereas I think if you look at this from a Fulham point of view, our playing styles don't seem to widely fluctuate too much. And I think that that's why when you sort of add Silva to the squad we already have, that it's a natural fit. But yeah, Lids, please feel free to take this monologue on to more interesting places from a Jags fan.
Well, I think we need to remember that they are very different sports. So I'm not exactly sure about how we can, you know, there's not that many similarities in terms of the sports themselves. But what I would say is that Shad seems to make decisions based on emotion a lot. And he's done that with Fulham and he's done that with the Jags. And that has ultimately led to failures throughout for Fulham since he took over, and for the Jags, well, yes, since he took over there as well. I've only really followed the Jags over the past 4 or 5 years, so I can't really speak for before that. But in that time, he seems to be quite swayed by individuals, I think. So Trent Bulka is one of the issues at the minute in the Jags franchise, who is the general manager. I would sort of
Trent Bulka is basically what Rasputin is to the Russian czars back in before the revolution, right?
Yeah, and he's and I think in terms of the of how, you know, sporting clubs are put together, it's sort of like a director of football for me. So it's sort of semi-similar to having Tony Khan where he is and sort of backing that man 100%, even when the evidence isn't necessarily backing that up. Now, Tony seems to have done a better job with Fulham. Maybe that's because he's taken a step back. Who knows? That's all very much a grey area. But in terms of Shad, I think to try not to go into too many NFL specifics, I would say that the problem is that he is basing decisions on emotion and not logic, and not necessarily relying on people who really know their stuff and relying on them to kind of help him make decisions. And I think that he is an owner who has shown that he is willing to put money into his, I mean, he's done something similar in Jacksonville that he's done with Craven Cottage. You know, he's completely redeveloped the training ground over there. It's state of the art. A lot of the places around the stadium in Jacksonville are fantastic, down to him. But when it comes to things on the field, sometimes it's emotion driven. And that has, as I said earlier, ultimately led to several failures. I think he needs to rely on people who really know their stuff and be the man with the money behind it. And he would be respected a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually very fascinating to hear the selection process, because from someone that doesn't really understand NFL, hearing those selection processes that Shade has gone through, it just sounds so similar to how he selects his coaches. And every time now, there does seem to be a bit of a pattern of how he selects his coaches, particularly when he's got a bit of time to select his coaches. You heard about how Marcus Silva, he went over to Portugal and Marcus Silva gave a presentation. There was the infamous presentation that Claudio Ranieri did for Shahid Khan as well, where he picked apart all of the goals that Fulham had conceded and showed Shahid Khan how we wouldn't have conceded those goals with X, Y, and Z tactics. And then he somehow came in and we conceded just as many goals as we did under Slavisa Jokanovic. So I think the snake oil expression does seem to be pertinent, but hopefully in the case right now, we have been sold someone that is a good coach, I would guess, from Marco Silva, but maybe that whole kind of come and give me a pitch thing isn't necessarily the way to run things. I would have imagined if I was knowledgeable enough or rich enough to be an owner or a GM, I would almost have made my mind up before I've met these people whether you've got the job or not. I don't need to cut you to come and give me a PowerPoint presentation about how to defend goals. And it seems like maybe too much is being given on kind of personalities and whether you can win the room. I don't know. We don't know exactly how these selection things go on, but there does seem to be some similarities. And I guess that would be the consistency across the two ponds. But anyway, Steve, thank you for your question. And fascinating to hear about what is happening over in Jacksonville. And I think they are pertinent. We're the same. They're the same ownership. Like, there definitely is similarities, even if the sports are wildly different, as Lydia mentioned. Right, a couple more slightly more silly questions just to finish the podcast. This one from Nathan says, every Christmas I get the same old question from my grandmother, how are Fulham doing? To which I always give the same old answer, yeah, not too bad. And this year she gave me the exact same reply as she does every year. Fulham always do get better after Christmas, though. Despite me doubting her football credentials, this does seem to be the case. Since we are at the midpoint in the season, how well do you think Fulham will do for the second half of the season? Or he says, though, I don't want Sammy to answer because he'll curse us for the rest of the season. So I'll stay out of this because I'm not allowed to answer, according to Nathan. But yeah, how do we see the second half of the season going? Jack, I'll start with you, as we haven't heard from you during the NFL debate.
Again, hard to say. I'm sort of harping back to what I said earlier about this sort of the fact we've been off for so long. But if we get back into the swing of things, I think on paper, we should finish in the top two, hopefully win the title at the Vitality Stadium in April. That would be fantastic. Should be top two. I'd be very surprised.
What percentage would you put on it? Right, Fulham to finish in the top two, what percentage would you say in confidence that you have? Let's say you're one of these, I don't know, spread bookies or whatever, and you had to give me a number. I want a number. I want an integer.
I'd say 85%. And that's just down to the fact that Blackburn seem to be picking up this form that right now seems quite remarkable. And QPR yesterday, their performance at Birmingham, albeit Birmingham are very poor, was very good. And actually, the team I'm most concerned about is Middlesbrough, because they genuinely are this new manager bounces that Chris Wilder's come in. And Chris Wilder's just completely picked up from, well, not from where he left off at Sheffield United, but in terms of in the Championship, just running riot, really. And they are a team to fear. But I think there's so much quality in this squad. I think, yeah, I think we will go up. Yeah.
Okay. Lids, if I had to give you a percentage, what would you say?
Just because I want to do something different from Jack, because I had 85% in my mind, I am going to go slightly more cautious and say 80%. More because I think we had that spell in the first half of the season, which was absolutely ridiculous. You know, scoring so many goals. We were, as much as a good team we are, some of the results we were pulling out were absolutely insane. Don't necessarily know if we can replicate that, but I do think we can sort of fix some of our mistakes. So, for example, the home game against Reading, that was awful. A couple of other absolute howlers. And then that spell of five games we've just had that have been pretty turgid. I think we can improve in that, but won't necessarily see the heights that we did consistently throughout the first half of the season. But yeah, I think we'll finish top two. And as Jack says, hopefully as Championship winners.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Ben, any wild difference on the percentages, or are you kind of in the 80 to 85% region as well?
Yeah, still in that bracket, but I think that there's been a flurry of transfer activity already in the Championship that is actually looking quite good. I think a lot of teams are making very positive transfers. So I think the one that stuck out to me yesterday was that West Brom signed Daryl DK, and then Nottingham Forest signed Davis from Villa. And then I think there's just a couple of others. Obviously, Connolly's just gone to Borough as well from Brighton. And I think that's quite a nice transfer. I think there's just a few out here that are really, really going into the swing of getting transfers in quite quickly. And this is one thing that always bugs me about Fulham, and I understand why we do it, is that we wait too long to make good moves in the transfer market. And I think if we're not careful, our heels could get pinched by some of those clubs that Jack spoke about there, especially Borough. And I think that signing is great, because I think there's one or two holes in that Borough team. And one of them was definitely a striker that can put the ball in the back of the net. And Connolly can definitely do that. He's got raw pace and he definitely knows where the goal is. I think this year he's just been really unlucky that Brighton have looked pretty, you know, pretty good going forward. The Daryl DK one for me is really interesting, because I thought that in the summer when he went back to Orlando, that's someone that Fulham could potentially go out and buy as like a backup or really nice competition for Mitrovic. And I actually had a few people in my mentions back when I was on Twitter, actually, saying that that wouldn't be a good move and he's not that good of a player. But actually, I thought for him to flourish in that Barnsley team that punched well above their weight last season, that's a really good move for West Brom because they've looked like they've been short of goals as well. So, and at least the target man. So, yeah, I think that those are two really good transfers and Fulham just need to get in gear a little bit now.
Yeah, it's a good point you mentioned over some of those transfers. I did notice particularly the Connolly one to Middlesbrough. The one thing that's given me some hope over Middlesbrough, considering I do agree they do look good under Chris Wilder, if Fulham can win the two games in hand that we have over Middlesbrough, that's still a 12-point gap. That's a lot. That's a lot of ground for Borough to make up on a team. And if Fulham can just have an okay second half of the season, that's still an awful lot for them to make up. But we know what Chris Wilder can do. And that second half of the season he had when Sheffield United went up under him was pretty sensational. Final email, and this is not really a question, from Andrew, who says, I'm flying out to Melbourne on New Year's Eve and I'll be staying for a few months. I want to watch all the games regardless. I know we have fans all around the globe and I'm going to be staying in Melbourne. So he was wondering if there are any Fulham fans in the Melbourne area of Australia that might want to watch the game with him. Feel free to tweet us or email us and we'll put you in contact with Andrew, but we're more than happy to do that. As I said, there's so many emails, didn't even get around to half of them today. We'll do more on Thursday. I will get through the backlog of them. Loving them coming through. hello@fulhamish.co.uk. Thank you for listening today. Bit of New Year nonsense really, but hopefully we'll get back to slightly more routine podcast shortly. I think there'll be a Thursday club with myself, Jack and Peter later in the week, so keep your eyes peeled on the podcast store for that one. Final request, if you're on Spotify and you listen to us on there, please could you give us a star rating? It's very simple. You don't even need to write anything. You literally just need to click on the little star button that's under where it says Fulhamish, and ideally 5 stars. If you're not going to give us 5 stars, then just don't bother. Maybe just keep it to yourself. But if you'd like to give us 5 stars, then we'd absolutely love to get a few more ratings on Spotify, as that's a bit of a new thing. And ratings anyway. If you listen on Apple, we can always do with a podcast review or rating on there as well. So yeah, thank you very much for listening today, and thank you for my guest, Jack Kelly.
Thank you, Sammy.
Lydia Campbell.
Thanks, guys.
And Ben Jarman.
Thanks, guys. I'll leave you with one nugget, which is if you are going to rate us on Spotify, your app may need to be updated before you do it.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
No
tech inspiration and tactics expert, Ben Jarman. He's going to go get himself a job at PC World now. Right. Thank you for listening. Have a good start to your new year and we'll see you later in the week. Come on, you whites.